Hi, welcome to Female Trouble. I'm Quinn Kelly, and this is a podcast spotlighting women in Baltimore. When you hear a band name like War on Women, you don't expect the music to appease you or make you comfortable. And indeed, that's not the point. The Baltimore-based hardcore punk band, which is co-ed, is fronted by Shauna Potter and puts issues like rape, abortion, and street harassment front and center. War on Women's self-titled debut LP came out last year, boasting feminist battle cries with titles like Meathead, Roe v. World, and YouTube comments. Rather than be a hardcore punk band that happens to have a woman at the helm, Shauna talked about her desire to establish their own narrative. She also talked about the person who made her realize girls could play in a band, getting over her hang-ups about being a front woman without a guitar, and about founding the local chapter of an anti-street harassment organization, Hollaback Baltimore. We recorded this episode a while ago, when Beyoncé's visual album Lemonade had just come out, so of course we had to talk about that too. Here's Shauna Potter of the band War on Women. Thanks for coming in, Shauna.
Thanks for having me.
So let's go back to the beginning. Where are you from originally?
I'm actually a Texas native.
A Texas native.
Yeah, I'm a Texan girl. That's where my family's from. That's where my mom and dad still live, though separately, I should say, because we're a modern family. Yeah, I grew up in Texas, moved around a lot with my mom, and I've also lived in California and Colorado. I went to high school in Nashville, and that's where I was before I moved to Baltimore around 2002.
How would you describe your childhood?
Nomadic. I definitely felt a lot of love from my mom, but I would say it was a pretty classic single mom situation where she would work as much as she needed to make sure that I could, you know, have food and shelter and go to school. And at some point I discovered, you know, rock music and realized that women could play instruments and be in bands too. And then that's all I wanted to do. I did a lot of theater growing up. I admit I was in like school plays and stuff in elementary school and junior high, which is probably where I get my sass on stage. but I just sort of funneled that into, you know, rock music.
Do you see the influence of, I guess, having a single mom? Do you see the impact on your life today? Are there things that come up when you're like, oh, wow, that really, you know, shaped my worldview or something like that?
Yeah. I mean, I think in general, I knew from the get-go that women could do anything. And it was always just very strange when someone that felt differently came up or if some other viewpoint of women being less than presented itself. I would just feel like, well, that's not right, you know, because my mom... Well, I think I can look back and say that she was really strong and worked really hard. It's also, you know, you do what you got to do. Like, it's not like she worked hard, but it's not a thing to necessarily, like, glamorize and put women on a pedestal for because that kind of otherizes them, you know? Like, they're just humans doing what they need to do, and that's really admirable, but we're totally capable. I would also say growing up single mom with no other kids around, it makes my patience for children very small.
So what brought you to Baltimore originally?
To join a band with Brooks Harlan, who was in, he plays guitar in War on Women. Yeah, he was in this band. They came through Nashville. My band had broken up, and I'm a guitar player, really. And I just heard all these guitar parts in their songs that weren't there. And I wanted to add those parts to their songs. And I lived in Nashville for about 5 years. And so I was kind of bored and wanting to move again because I'm so used to moving growing up. And I was like, so where do you guys live? And they said, Baltimore. I was like, well, I've never been on the East Coast. Let's do this. And luckily, they were actually open to the idea of having me move to join their band. So we did that for a while. That band was called Avec. And we played around Baltimore a lot and made some records I'm really proud of. And then it just kind of fizzled out naturally. And then Brooks and I decided we kind of wanted to do something heavier that had a very specific and overt message.
Does touring with your band kind of fulfill that nomadic tendency of yours still?
Oh my gosh, it does. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually really great. Yeah, really great question. I don't think about it a lot, but it totally does. Like, I'm very, very happy in Baltimore. I don't see any reason to move anywhere else. I understand, you know, people that have lived here their entire life, people that live anywhere their entire life, I understand why they just want to, you know, they feel like they just want to get out. I get that. But I've done that. I've moved way too many times. And I really enjoy Baltimore. I really enjoy the music scene, the art scene. I kind of love how there's stuff to improve and people that care and like so many nonprofits that are working really hard to improve the lives of Baltimoreans. I really support that. But yeah, going on tour, you get your fill of bad travel, food and shelter, and then you get to come home to your bed that's yours. And it's a really great feeling. So yeah, a bit different than my early childhood.
War on Women is a co-ed band. I think all of the qualifiers are Baltimore co-ed feminist punk hardcore,
yeah.
Right? Did I get everything?
It's a lot.
Yeah, it's right? A lot. Are people surprised by that if they haven't heard you yet? You know, they hear feminist band and then they go to the show and, you know, you're made up of half men.
I guess I don't know. I don't know. If they're surprised, they don't tell us. I guess there might be an assumption that it's all women. But we only get, you know, stupid questions every so often. We're very lucky, actually. I would assume that we would get a lot more harassment or ignorant comments. But at our shows, people seem to be very supportive and into it. And even if it's not their thing, it's like a good thing to see. I mean, that's what I think. Mm-hmm. I want people to see women and men working together for equality. Because to me, that's the next step. I think feminism, without the acknowledgement of needing allies, I think it's, I mean, just like any fight for civil rights or equality or equity, social justice, it cannot be fully won without allies. I mean, you can do so much. You can do so much without them, and you should. But at some point, you need other people that are in those positions of power to let some of their power go, hand it over, and work with you to put, you know, policies in place and get rid of the systematic and institutional things that keep us from being equal.
Do you remember when you first started considering yourself a feminist? Did you have any kind of aha moment?
Yeah, I do. And I think I always was. I just didn't know it, just didn't verbalize it or have the language to verbalize it. But I think I did start getting the magazine Bitch in the mail. Just seemed like the right and a natural extension because of the music I was listening to, you know, Bikini Kill and stuff like that. And I just remember reading an article about how then President George Bush wanted to restrict reproductive rights. And I just thought, but why? He can't get pregnant. Why is he, like, this is an overreach, you know? It seems so obvious to me. And then I was like, oh, I'm like of age now, like I'm 18 or older, and I need to get involved. I need to do something. I need to make my voice heard. Otherwise, these old men are going to tell me what I can do with my body. That's not right. It was so obvious that's not okay.
In some circles, there's definitely a misconception, I think, that feminists are really serious and self-important and man-hating. But you guys obviously have a lot of fun with your music. You have a lot of fun in your live sets, it seems. Is that a conscious effort to, you know, make the message go down easier? Do you ever feel like you have to take the edge off a bit?
Spoonful of sugar, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, honestly, we're having fun because if we weren't, we wouldn't be doing it, you know? Like, we all have fun playing shows. So that's really natural. That's not something that we force. But we know that is, you know, a little bit in opposition from the seriousness of the topics I'm singing about, right? But that's, I mean, me personally, again, this is all just what we want, what we like, what we're into, right? Like, we certainly don't claim to represent all feminism, just like we don't claim to represent all hardcore punk music either. But when I go to a show, I don't like to be preached at. I don't. It makes me uncomfortable. I don't mind someone saying a few words about something that's important to them, or this song's about this. 1, 2, 3, hit it. You know, that's fine. But these long monologues, or like, if you don't get into this issue, then you're a horrible garbage person. You know, I'm not okay with that. So it's almost a blessing for us. We're such goofballs and we have so much fun on stage that it's a blessing that the stereotype is that feminists are always angry, because then as long we're just not angry and having fun, and somehow we're shattering a stereotype. It's just very easy for us. We want to have fun and we want everyone in the audience to have fun. I mean, we're singing about abortion and rape and sexual harassment. So why would I want to trigger? I don't want to trigger anyone. It might happen, but I don't want to force anyone to feel like crap when they leave. You know, like, let's have fun. This is a time to let go of all that trauma that you're hanging on to, all the BS that everyone puts on you, all the constrictions that society has of telling you how to dress, how to live, who to be. Our show is a time to let go of that and just have fun and dance, I hope, anyway.
So is performing cathartic for you? Because I would imagine with such heavy topics with a lot of your songs, that could also maybe work me at least into a frenzy after I performed and just get even angrier. But
righteously angry, though, right? Right? In a good way. No, it actually is really cathartic for me, and it's a way for me to process the things I feel about being part of an oppressed group and also being part of a privileged group since I'm white and cisgender. Navigating all that stuff, you know, we just sweat it out. There are definitely times where I feel maybe a little more righteous and inspired, and that's usually when there's more like young people, young women, young queers in the front looking at me and like singing along. Like, that's really, that just, it's just so beautiful to see that. But for the most part, I'm letting go of everything on stage. And if anything, I hope that people in the audience are either also just letting stuff go or they're getting inspired. But after our show, I'm just spent, just mentally and physically. I'm just done.
And what's your fan base like? I mean, do you find a lot of people who come, you know, for a hardcore punk show, not necessarily, you know, who identify as feminists, and do you see kind of like a conversion happen, or who do you think are your biggest fans?
Our parents.
They have to be, right?
They love us so much. It's hard to say. I don't think anyone goes to a War on Women show not at least looking into whether or not there are women in the band, right? Like, I don't think anyone is totally surprised that there's women in the band and that it might be feminist leaning. And if they are, they have a lot of learning to do. But, you know, we often play. It's not like we headline every show by any means. We actually really like touring with bigger bands to expose us to more people that would never come see us on their own, right? So we play all the time to people that just know that they like hardcore, you know, that just like the style of music. And they, you know, after a couple songs, they're like, oh, okay, they start to get it. And usually people are totally on board. It's actually pretty rare that I just see people bored out of their mind. Like, I'd almost be fine if they were like angry, but like to be bored at our show is even worse, because I feel like we have some pretty catchy songs, you know. We try to make it fun for everybody.
What's the best compliment someone could give you after a set?
I think I've gotten it a couple times, and that's usually, I think it's when people tell me that our song Say It really helped them through. And just for everyone that doesn't know, our song Say It is about rape and rape culture. And the chorus is really just a kind of a call, a directive. We want people to say I was raped out loud. That's what the song is asking. So when people tell me that that song helped them through their rape or their trauma, I'm very humbled by it. I think the whole band is. It's really amazing that something could be so important to people.
Kind of backtracking a little bit, what was your introduction to the hardcore punk scene?
I think as a genre of music, maybe not a scene. Like, I wouldn't say I was involved in a scene, like going to shows all the time. But yeah, I guess just the Refused, The Shape of Punk to Come. Like, I feel like that was probably like the first like heavy record like that that wasn't like metal or, you know, because I liked Metallica and Danzig and stuff. But that was like different, you know, that was like intelligent punk. Because I don't like anything that sounds like Blink-182. You know what I mean? That's not for me. So, yeah, I guess Refuse. And then since then, I honestly, I think everyone else in my band knows more about hardcore than I do. They are true punks. They are true metalheads, all that stuff. And yeah, I can't answer it as well, to be honest with you. But I think that I don't look at that as a con. I don't look at it as a bad thing. I think if I was, you know, born and bred on hardcore, I would just maybe sound like every other hardcore singer. I think in any genre, especially when you get kind of specific into sub-genres, the risk is everyone sounding the same. Everyone's doing the same thing, sounding the same, and I don't want that. And so it's really actually important to me that I don't get hung up and I don't just listen to hardcore. And that, you know, and that the rest of the band, you know, we all listen to a lot of eclectic things. And I think that really informs how we write our music. But I don't just want to be doing some other hardcore band and happen to be a woman. Like, I want it to be uniquely me. I want it to be my voice. And I think I've worked a little hard to try to make sure that that happens.
It seems like that is the overall trend in music as of late. I feel like scenes are a little blurrier. Maybe it's just the internet, but everyone's into more things, it seems.
Yeah.
Has diverse, more diverse tastes. I don't know.
People I definitely
seem a
chalk
lot
it up to
optimism,
that.
You know. Yeah. People seem to just embrace it all a lot more easily now.
Yeah, I think the mainstream is like, you can be mainstream and underground at the same time somehow, and that's okay. Because everyone just seems to like everything. I think everyone always did, but it was so hard to find like a niche group that liked the same weird stuff you did that it sort of policed itself, you know, like, oh, well, we're only into this kind of music, you know. So now I think there's so many people that like so many things, you can broaden your interest without the fear of like not having a group of friends over it. Right?
Right?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It just seems very like junior high, right?
It does. It really does. Yeah.
I like that we're past that. I don't like giving money to mainstream artists when I can help it.
So did you illegally stream Lemonade?
Oh, okay. I have HBO Go, so I did watch it. Don't tell anyone.
I won't. At least you got to watch it. You have to do what you have to do, right?
Yeah. I definitely watched it, and I'm almost afraid to give any opinion on it at all because the Bayhive would come after me.
They will. They will find this small burgeoning podcast and go after you.
And I'm a member, but I still can have opinions.
That's right.
Or maybe we should get them attacked. I mean, maybe Warren Women would just blow up.
Yeah, this could be really great PR for both of us. So was there someone in your youth who you looked to, a musician maybe, who made you believe you could do this, made you believe you could be a front woman, or did it never occur to you that you couldn't be one?
Well, actually, so confession time. The first person that ever made me think I could be in a band was Courtney Love. Sorry, everyone. I saw a whole video on MTV, and I saw her playing guitar, and I was young, and I was like, oh, women can play guitar? I want to do that. And that's all it took. And that's why I'm such a big proponent of representation in media. Young kids have no idea what they're capable of until they see someone that looks like them doing it. And so I think that's really important. Anyone that makes any kind of art or media in any way, like, please just keep that in mind. So I started playing guitar, and then I realized, you know, I got a band together and we started playing shows, and I realized like, oh, people really don't like it when women play guitar, right? Like, people always have something to say, or they think you're amazing when you're really just perfectly average, like most guitar players, but they think you're amazing because you're a hot chick, you know? So like, you can't win. Like, no one's actually accurately judging your talent in any way. So for a while, I sort of got this idea that, well, I have to play guitar. Like, I have to keep playing guitar in bands. Because if I don't, then I'm just another, quote-unquote, female singer. right? Like somehow my talent would be less valid if I was just singing. I needed an instrument on stage. I needed to prove to the world that women can play guitar, which is a really heavy weight. That's a really big burden for one person. But I was trying to take that on. And so when Brooks and I were talking about, you know, doing a new band and maybe me just being the singer, I had to really think about it. I had to really wrap my head around the idea that I still had worth if I didn't have a guitar in front of me. And that no one ever said, like, oh, Robert Plant, he just sings. You know? And not that I'm comparing myself to Robert Plant, but people don't do that to male singers because everyone else in their band is a man. So like they're not having to represent their entire gender in what they're doing. And so having other women in our band really, really helped me mentally to just let go of that idea that I have to represent all women and I have to play guitar to prove that we can. You know, there's plenty of women playing guitar. I don't need to do that. And I think once I did that, I feel like I really, I don't know, like came into my own. Like I really, really actually enjoy being a front person. I really enjoy not being responsible for big, heavy gear. And that sounds so like surface, but it's true. I like jumping up there, doing my thing, getting off stage. And it feels really good. And I love the physicality. Like I always felt, this is very true. I always felt constrained a little bit by my guitar. And I didn't know it. I couldn't like verbalize that. But I would always mess up little parts now and again because I was just moving too much and I couldn't not move. And so to have total freedom and only be connected, you know, to a mic with a cable like that, it just feels so good. So now I try to just be as authentically myself as I can. I don't like model what I do on stage after anyone. I actually try to let go of any pretense, any expectation, any embarrassment for dancing funny, you know? Like I try to let everything go and just be fully present and in the moment, and it makes it really, I don't know, makes it a really wonderful experience for me.
Was that an obstacle you had to overcome early on? Did you find yourself imitating some of your, you know, favorite front people?
No, but I did. I was a little like reserved, you know, worried that I would embarrass myself or like, oh, everyone's watching me and I don't have a guitar to save me. Because, you know, with guitar, you can look at the neck, you can look at what you're playing, you can look at your hands. And you just have a mic, you have to look at the audience and you have to look at them looking at you. So I think I just had to get over like any potential embarrassment. But I really, part of it might be age, you know, I'm in my 30s. I think I just decided. I just legit decided, I don't care. I don't care what they think. Like, this is my moment. This is my time. These 20 fast minutes. This is for me. This is for us. This is for our band. So I just let go.
Well, speaking of the audience, you are not afraid to be blunt and confrontational. I think most people probably describe your music that way. With Broken Record, for example, one of your songs, I know that you have addressed either a friend who's planted in the audience or maybe a random heckler, whatever you're feeling that night, right?
Yeah.
And you've addressed the whole song to them.
Yeah.
Does that come naturally to you? Do you enjoy the confrontational aspect? Or is that something you have to, you know, kind of push yourself to do?
I do push a little bit. I do want to give people permission. You don't have to confront every person all the time if you don't feel safe or comfortable. You know, that's totally normal and natural. But I did have to realize or just take into account that, like, I am the one on stage. I am the one with a mic and a loud PA behind me. I am the one in control. I'm the one in power in this situation. And that is, you know, I have the opposite feeling when I'm walking down the street, right? So being able to be in that position is just so empowering. So, you know, if I'm not feeling super confrontational then and I see a friendly face, I know they know our songs, I'll just start. Basically, the song is me acting as street harasser, basically harassing someone in the ways that I've been harassed or friends have been harassed. Like everything I say in that song, I've heard or had a friend that told me about it. Like, it's all true. I didn't make any of it up. And I will change it up sometimes depending on if I was harassed recently and it really bugged me. I'll put their harassment in there. So yeah, I'll harass my friend and they usually smile and they're just letting it happen. But even that, I'm holding eye contact with them and that gets awkward. So there's always a feeling of like, hey, both of us are uncomfortable here, but I want you to, you audience member, I want you to take that on. I don't want to feel uncomfortable anymore. Here it is. Here's that feeling. And then, yeah, sometimes I'll find like a really tall or big person, you know, that obviously probably walks through life with a lot of privilege and feeling safe in the street. Or if someone was kind of, you know, heckling us or just looked bored, like, again, those rare moments where someone just looks bored or they're obviously waiting for the other band that's going on after us, like, I'll engage them, you know, like, get involved here. And my favorite story is we were on tour and we were staying with Sue's brother, and he knew about the band, and we all met him earlier that night, and, you know, he knew what was up. I don't know if he'd really heard our songs before, though, but to me, he was a friendly face. So I started singing to him, and at first he was like smiling, and then it kept going and his smile was sort of going away, and then he was like, oh, what's going on, this is really weird, and he kind of started looking around, shifting his eyes, and then I was still harassing him, and he was like, oh, this is relentless, and he, you could tell he just got smaller, right? He just got really uncomfortable. And me, I'm like, oh, this is a great experience. Like, he really got it. He got the idea of street harassment. But later on, he told Sue, like, did I do something to make Shauna mad? Like, is she okay? And I was like, what?
I mean, I guess that proves the point. Like, yes. You know, when a woman's walking down the street, she's not doing anything either. But clearly that doesn't stop anyone. So.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And a rational person who it doesn't happen to regularly was like, oh, this isn't right. It makes me feel uncomfortable. Is something wrong? Did I do something? Right? So, of course, women and LGBTQ folks feel that way. What? Oh, no. What did I do? Is it my fault? Did I do something wrong? Because they're rational, normal people, you know? Like, it's not a normal experience. It shouldn't be. It's normalized, but it's not an okay thing for people to go through. So, I don't know. I like it. I like it when I can put that back on people in the audience. And I have plenty of men approach me after shows specifically talking about that song to say that watching us perform and basically engaging in this harassment that we normally get is what made them sort of understand street harassment and why it's something that's not okay. I mean, that's incredible too. That's very humbling.
Street harassment is the focus of Hollaback Baltimore, which you founded the local chapter, and now you serve on the advisory board.
Yeah.
What is Hollaback Baltimore and what prompted you to found the local chapter?
Well, Hollaback is a worldwide organization, and its whole purpose is to raise awareness about street harassment and to, you know, serve as a resource for people that experience it. And of course, we're talking about street harassment. That's sexual harassment in public from strangers. And it can take many forms. You know, it can be as simple as, hey, baby, when you're walking down the street, but it can be whistling, it can be leering, it can be groping, it can be honking a car horn, it can be assault, it can be stalking, all these things. And it looks different for different people too. So I'm going to experience, you know, I'm fairly thin, I'm young looking, I'm white. My experience is going to be totally different than other folks, right? People of color, trans women, etc. So at some point I was, let's call out Catonsville for a second. At some point I was living in Catonsville and I could walk to my bank, you know, I just lived a couple blocks away because I was living in downtown Catonsville. Right? Whoop, whoop. So it seemed like every time I walked to the bank, which I had to do a lot because I had to do for work. I worked right there too. Every time I walked to the bank, the people at this oil change place would whistle at me, say something, just make me feel really uncomfortable, right? Like, they made it so that I didn't want to go to the bank, which is super dumb. I'm just running errands, right? And it didn't matter what the weather was. It didn't matter what I was wearing. They just felt like they had a right to comment on my body and to say what they wanted to do to it. And I didn't really have the language to use to really describe, like, why it was so maddening, you know, why it was so frustrating, why it felt so scary. Describing it to my boss or my boyfriend when I got home, they were just like, oh, that's too bad. What's the big deal? Get over it. And I couldn't relay to them how important it was. So even when one time I even confronted them at this oil change place, and they all didn't take responsibility. Every single one of them was like, I didn't say anything. I didn't do it, you know? So obviously they knew, like, they did something wrong. They weren't even owning up to it. But I don't know. I was stuck in Catonsville. I wasn't really doing anything. Avec had sort of fizzled out. We weren't really playing anymore. I didn't go to the city a lot to go to shows. I just felt like I was really stuck. in a small town. So I think a way for me to not only deal with my own street harassment, but to also feel like I was involved in something, like doing something important. I don't know. I read about Hollaback and what they were all about, and I was like, I have to do that. It wasn't even a question. It was like, I have to start my own chapter. So I did. I just got involved. And I ran the website, the Baltimore website, for like 4 years and put on events and tabled and got resources, you know, postcards printed that explain what street harassment is and did all kind of stuff to just raise awareness in the city. And then last year, I realized I was just spread too thin and I wanted to take a step back and hand over the reins, you know, so I can concentrate on war on women. I felt like bringing our message to audiences hopefully is enough of a form of activism. Like, I sort of get that same like feeling, but I'm taking it everywhere and kind of serving it to people in a palatable way, I hope. So I felt like, okay, I can do this and I can do it really well and I really like it. And so someone else should run the site. And I feel very happy to have given it over to Brittany Oliver, who is just an amazing local person. And she's running it with Leah Michaels and Matt Morgan and other volunteers. And yeah, it's still really awesome. And I still am very involved in doing safer space trainings. So that's what I've been doing the last year or so. And that's a little bit more on my schedule, not like an everyday thing that I have to keep up with.
What do you say to people who dismiss street harassment as not a big deal? Because that does seem to be the most common reaction to any kind of conversation around that.
I guess it depends on how they say it. Like, if they really are interested, but they just don't get it, I think it's very easy to just go on the Hollaback website and read other people's stories about street harassment. Once you start hearing from people that experience it in their own words and how it really feels and what really happens, it's very easy to dismiss any like myths or misconceptions about street harassment. Because it really isn't about like, oh, I just can't take a compliment. You know, it really is threatening. It really is verging on violent behavior. It sometimes leads to violent behavior because it's on that same spectrum. It's on that spectrum of gender-based violence. It's a part of it. It's all about making certain people feel like they don't have a right to public space in the way that you do, which is BS. So yeah, I normally tell people to read the site. Like, it could do more for them than I ever could. But, you know, but if someone's just being a jerk about it, then I don't have to talk to them at all.
What would you be doing if you weren't in War on Women?
Well, I'd be doing what I'm doing now, which is repairing guitars and amplifiers at Big Crunch Amp Repair. I would just not go on tour and probably get more work done.
So your life would be wildly better.
Yeah, it might be. Yeah, absolutely. Rent, I'd be like, no problem. I got rent money. Don't worry about it. Yeah, it'd be a little less stressful. But no, I don't know if I think with War on Women, I want to ride it out as long as I can, as long as people are interested, you know? It's very rare to be in a band that does anything that anyone pays attention to, right? Like, I've been in plenty of bands no one cared about at all, and that's fine. And no one could care about this band, and it would still be important to me, but it's a rare opportunity to talk about feminism to people that wouldn't normally hear it. And I want to keep doing that until people really just don't want to listen to us anymore. So as long as I can, everywhere I can.
Does knowing that you have some attention on the band at all influence your songwriting, your performance, your decision making? I mean, is there any more pressure now that you guys are out there?
In a way, I mean, we're certainly just barely starting to think about recording another record. And, you know, so we're sort of talking about the bigger, loftier concepts or broader ideas of how we want the record to be, knowing it could easily change when you actually start finishing songs. Sometimes the songs are like, here we are, we're done. And you're like, oh, that's what the record sounds like. Okay, that's fine. But I think I have better habits as far as like writing lyric go. When something comes in my head, like immediately write it down or record a voice memo or something, you know, so I don't lose it. Instead of just assuming that, oh, I'll be fine, I can write a whole record in 3 days. Like, no, it's not going to happen. It didn't happen with the last one. So I'm just trying to be more conscious of not losing any good lyrics that pop into my brain, allowing them to do that, and then making sure that we don't necessarily cover like the same exact topics. Like, feminism is so broad. There's, like, basically every issue you can think of, there is a feminist point of view on it. And it affects women in some way, right? So I just want to make sure that we can, you know, just represent different ideas. I mean, you can only do so much. You have, like, 10, 12 songs. You can't cover every issue. You can't please everyone. But I can certainly try to make sure we don't just repeat ourselves. We already have the abortion song. I don't need to do another one, you know?
So you have the YouTube comments song. So next you can do Facebook comments, right, Instagram comments.
Yeah, people will be like, okay, we get it.
Oh, so what's next for you and the band?
We're touring a lot this year, which is certainly delaying our writing the new record thing.
So it's like a fun form of procrastination.
Yes. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. No, I really, really, really like our record. And so I'm very happy to keep touring on it and trying to get it in people's hands. So, yeah, we're touring with Flag this summer. And then we're home for a week and we go to Europe for 3 weeks. And we have a couple more tours in the fall that I can't announce yet. And we will be going to Fest in Florida, which is kind of a big, you know, punk, hardcore, blah, blah, blah kind of festival. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. But yeah, it'll be paying the rent thing. That's definitely going to come up.
Well, Shauna, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Female Trouble. We're back each week with a new episode, and you can make sure you don't miss anything by subscribing on iTunes. You can also give us a rating if you liked what you heard. We're on Twitter at FML Trouble. Female Trouble is available online at baltimoresun.com/femaletrouble and soundcloud.com/femaletrouble. Our theme song is Dope Girls by Shifty, featuring Baltimore's own TT the Artist. See you next time.